Welcome to the Catholic Cafe, where Catholic truth is served fresh daily. We've made you a reservation in the luxurious corner booth, so come on in and see what's on the menu today. Now, here's your host, Deacon Jeff Drzemski.
Greetings and welcome to the Catholic Cafe. I'm Deacon Jeff, sitting in the luxurious corner booth of the Catholic Cafe. I've got Ziggy Rodriguez here.
That's me.
And I've also got Venerable Tom Dorian.
Hello.
My voice always goes down when I say Venerable Tom Dorian. You know, there's something venerable about Venerable
it's
Tom.
It's kind of nice because at home, the voices go up. They don't go down.
Dad! It's okay. It's all right. You know, one day they'll know when we're all celebrating a Mass. You know, for you.
Then you'll be intoning on a feast day. His name. It'll be up and down, you know.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, it'll be wonderful. Before we get kicked off today, I do want to mention to folks that it's that time of year again. And so what time it is, it's we're going to have Giving Tuesday. I Give Catholic. So the Catholic Cafe will be participating, if I can say it, in I Give Catholic again this year. It was very helpful to us last year. And I'm hoping that it'll be helpful to us again this year. So just be aware that Giving Tuesday, the Tuesday that follows Thanksgiving weekend, it's an important day for us because you have an opportunity to support us financially. We always want your support prayerfully. We have lots of things to do here at the Catholic Cafe. We're going to need to update our equipment, and we need some more equipment, which means we need some more money. We don't get paid for this. We do this out of the goodness of our hearts. Maybe because we also have some kind of psychological issues or something. It's also possibly why we do this.
That's a distinct possibility.
Yeah, we love this. We love being here. We love get together. It's almost like a little club for us. And so this is a great opportunity for you to help support the club. You know, you're buying snacks for the club members. You know,
actually, we're good on snacks.
Yeah, we are good on snacks. You're right. We got the
equipment,
family-sized box of Cheez-Its. We're getting ready to getting ready to be Chex Mix season too.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
I'm already excited.
I know you are. And so, by the way, all the right things were on sale because apparently manufacturers know when that season starts, and so they start putting stuff on sale. I bought everything I need.
Oh wow!
So I'm gonna be brewing up some.
Yeah.
So that's gonna be coming up soon. But I Give Catholic is right around the corner. We've got a couple of weeks, and so honestly, if you can just go to igivecatholic.com, or if you search I Give Catholic Catholic Cafe, when you go to I Give Catholic, just search for Catholic Cafe or the Diocese of Memphis. We're a part of the Diocese of Memphis, and so you'll be able to find us there. And then look at our materials online, see if it's something you want to support. I'm hoping that you will. And let's help us to keep evangelizing, helping people to know that Jesus is Lord and that also Jesus wants us to have some fun and enjoy ourselves in a way that's holy, you know.
Yes.
And so this is for a good time, you know. This is what we're doing here at the Catholic Cafe, and we want to keep this thing going. We have been a podcast since podcast started.
We were podcasting before podcasting.
Before
was
it
cool.
Was cool, you know. And the thing is, we've been doing it. It's going on 18 years.
Wow.
So it's before, because we started let's put it on the interwebs, you know. And we did. We started loading programs up.
Do the math. Think how old we were.
Yeah, we were I think we were 12. You and I were 12, Tom, when we started this thing.
That's right.
And you know what? Ziggy wasn't even born yet. He learned to walk on one of our episodes. So it's really, really, it's been a great ride. We want to continue doing it. We love it so much. And we're thankful to, you know, our broadcast partners like EWTN, I know that we've touched many lives because we've gotten many emails. And by the way, you can send an email, deaconjeff@thecatholiccafe.com. Let us know how you're doing. Let us know.
Send us a question. We got to do a show on some emails.
You know what? I can collect the questions
and we can do it.
We have the mailbag. We can go back to the mailbag. I don't want a jingle. Okay, don't do the jingle.
Oh, okay. You got a Grammy, I think.
Yeah. No, it was a granny. Because your grandmother loved it.
I sang it for my granny.
Oh, Ziggy. You know, she was so happy. So here's the thing. All fun and games until your kids stop going to church. Now suddenly things get somber.
Mm-hmm.
One of the biggest, I think, issues, I'm getting ready to do a talk with a group. And interestingly, this is the second t- time I've given this particular talk, it'll be a different crowd, on the topic of like the idea that like, hey, my kids aren't going to church anymore. And you look around in your own parish and you start looking around realizing most people have gray hair in there. Where have all the children gone, right? Where are the kids? And it's a very, very common phenomenon in families where the kids, like as parents, we've been Catholic all our lives and we're faithful and we go. And so most of my listeners are in this boat, right? We go to Mass. You know, now I know, and I'm so happy that some of our listeners are people who are considering being Catholic. I think we have a fairly large, we'll just say Protestant or non-Catholic Christian audience, just because we're kind of friendly here. We like to have conversations, friendly conversation about faith. You know, but the reality is for Catholics, and it's also true in mainline Protestant faiths, where kids are leaving the church. Kids have stopped going. It's like, I don't want to be part of my parents' religion, right? Mm-hmm. It's you think about it, where parents for as long as there have been parents, there have been parents out of touch. Mm-hmm. I mean, you go all the way back to the days of Elvis, you know, and parents, I don't like that Elvis. He shakes his hips too much, you know, and the kids, Mom, Dad, you know, we're just having fun. And nowadays, I was saying this to Bess. Hi, Bess. I was saying to her just the other day, I said, like, I long for the days of when Elvis was our biggest problem United States. When that's what we're worried about. Right now, we got kids that essentially are not going to church anymore because they don't necessarily believe that there is a God, or that if they believe there's a God, that God's not relevant to them. Mm-hmm. Right? It's not an important thing. And so they're knee-deep in social issues. They're knee-deep in living their lives with their friends and what's important to the quote-unquote young people. Now, I don't want to start sounding like a 63-year-old man in America, which I am, but the reality is I don't want to put myself in this box and say, I don't understand these kids these days.
You think it's gotten worse, or do you think it's just a phase? We're that age.
I think it's gotten worse because I think the further you get from the truth, mm-hmm. right? So it starts subtle. It starts small. Like, does it matter that I genuflect in front of the tabernacle? Does it matter when I'm in the church I do that before I genuflect before I go in the pew? And you think, like, that little action. You know, and someone might say, God is not going to cast you into hell because you didn't genuflect before you got into the pew. Mm-hmm. Right? And that's true. God's not going to cast you in hell for that reason. Mm-hmm. But you can start to see things that are systemic and things that are symptomatic of bigger problems. And you start realizing, well, if this isn't important, neither is this, and neither is this. And pretty soon you start, like, discarding truths of the faith, what the church has always taught. Mm-hmm. So then you have people saying, well, it doesn't really matter whether you receive communion on your knees or standing, right? It doesn't really matter. You hear people saying things like that, it doesn't matter. And what ends up happening is, I think slowly but surely, like, reverence at Mass leaves. And when reverence at Mass leaves, relevance of Mass leaves, mm-hmm. I think. And I think it's a natural progression. So I think things have gotten worse.
Well, and actually, if you look at the statistics, there are some parishes that are growing, and including with people of a younger demographic and young families, and those parishes tend to be ones
that play Captain Antonio songs. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly right.
Yes.
No, perfect. No, more reverent, you have a lot of times you'll have clergy there who are going out of their way to try to create the most beautiful experience possible. Sometimes, you know, you're talking about, you know, traditional Latin Mass, but it doesn't have to be that. Sometimes you have, you know, very reverent Novus Ordo with polyphony and chant.
Lots of incense, lots of altar servers.
No-nonsense preaching, you know, where it's teaching what the church has always taught. And there's been a lot of young people who have been drawn to that. And in fact, there's been a lot of young people who they've left Protestant denominations and they're searching for more sort of traditional liturgy, traditional teachings. And churches like that actually have had an uptick. And, you know, you also have within a lot of the traditional Latin Mass oriented religious orders like the FSSP, there's vocation booms. So there are certain pockets of the church that are growing, but you know,
but those are and I don't doubt that at all, and I agree with that and understand that. But those are pockets,
yeah,
right? And that's that, that's the one issue I have is that that leaves this large swath of people who are sort of just like doing their normal thing at their normal parish, their normal Novus Ordo parish that's kind of, it's trying to be everything to all people and ends up, you know, in my experience, again, this is not criticizing any particular parish I've been to, but I just think the music has gotten banal. I think the preaching has gotten pretty lightweight. And I just think that you've got all these extraordinary ministers. Now, I'm not calling for traditional Latin Mass to be said at every parish.
Right.
But I am calling for more reverence at Mass.
Yeah.
And again, I am actually I'm liking the idea that I think the Holy Spirit has put on my heart, as the Protestants would say, you know, that I'm likening the word reverence to relevance. And I'm seeing a connection there that when things are more reverent, they become more relevant to you. They become more important to you, and you want, and I think you see, you sense something that's supernatural, something that's otherworldly, something that is like the reason why I'm here, like in reverence, where you see something consecrated and set apart. And I don't think it has to be the traditional Latin Mass, but I do think that, like, to some degree, in some parishes, we've thrown the baby out with the bathwater in getting rid of certain parts and pieces of a Mass. And so that's why I want to encourage the traditional Latin Mass. I want to encourage its use, because I think that's actually causing a lot of people, it's answering a problem where young people are trying to find a relevant place for their reverence, right? They're trying to find that. So I think that's a good thing, because I do see the pockets there. But at the same time, what I was hoping, like with Summorum Pontificum, when Pope Benedict put that out, I was hoping that if you just allowed the traditional Latin Mass unfettered, if you notice, by the way, it didn't overtake the church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It grew in a healthy way, but it didn't overtake and like swallow up the rest of the church.
Mm-hmm.
But I was hoping that some of that reverence would like sort of spill over.
Rub off
into the Novus Ordo, where I don't sense it has. In fact, what I've seen is like a pushback from our bishops saying, no, we don't want this. Oh, my goodness. We don't want to lose control here. Mm-hmm. And I may be speaking out of turn and I don't want to be disrespectful to any bishops. And I know they have a tough job.
Intention.
It is not the intention. But at the same time, I'm just
hungering. Observing.
Yeah. I'm hungering for this opportunity that we have right now, where I think. You know, bishops need to read the room and look and see what's going on in the church and what are people hungering for, right? And they're supposed to be the chief feeder of the people.
Mm-hmm.
And to, like, what would be a good diet for the people? And I don't think that right now they're fingers on the pulse.
Mm-hmm. You know, when you were talking about the relationship between relevance and reverence, another R word came to mind, and that is religion, and specifically the virtue of religion, which a lot of times, you know, we hear in the South, a lot of times people say like, oh, well, I love Jesus, but I'm not religious. I'm
spiritual, yeah, but not religious.
Or you'll hear, yeah, people also outside the Christian context, I'm spiritual, but not religious.
Well, they're usually Christian kids.
That too. Sometimes it'll be that.
And they're Catholic kids at the Catholic school saying, well, you know, on their bios or whatever online, they'll say, I'm spiritual, but not religious.
Right, but then you also have people who are like on fire Protestants say, what you need is Jesus, not religion, right? And
yeah,
so like religion has become sort of a byword. And I think that what they see is that the word religion is like, oh, that's a mechanism for control by those in power and organized religion, and that they're getting away. They're necessarily going to be operating in accordance with like the Pharisees.
You know what the problem
like
is? You saying that way,
yeah,
just struck in my mind this image of like we are reliving history. We're really reliving the 1960s,
mm-hmm,
right, where it was anti the man,
yeah,
right, anti government, anti institution, anti whatever, and that was some of the decline of the Catholic Church in the 1960s. When all that stuff started, because at the same time, you remember things like, you know, again, I'm talking to the old people in the audience. You know, we remember things like the Vietnam War. We remember Watergate, and where there was a distrust for government and a distrust for the man, the authority, you know. And so you had the hippie culture. You had all this pushback, and you had, you know, burning draft cards and brassieres. It's like all these things that were going on in the culture, which were a rejection of the institution, which made the church suffer in a big way. And I don't know that the church ever really was able to kind of answer it. Doesn't mean that the church is going to fail, because the gates of hell will not prevail against it. But right now it's a difficult time, especially for the young people. And I think that we have young people now who are wanting to discard anything that seems to be organized or run by a bunch of old doddering, you know, authoritarians in their minds. And at the end of the day, it's like we got to go deeper than that and realize our church is 2,000 years old and it's not going anywhere. And then how can we keep this church, like as St. Augustine said, ever ancient and ever new? Right? How do we adapt in a way where we're applying this ever ancient truth to the young people today? And so I have lots of parents, getting back to the kids, lots of parents who say, like, my kids have left the church. What do I do? I don't know what to do. I have no idea what I'm supposed to do. And I've tried telling them, I've tried encouraging them, I've tried mandating it, I've tried all these things, but basically they tolerate it. They don't like it when they're little kids, and when they get a little older, then they definitely don't like it, but they sit there with their arms folded. They don't participate. We got to force them to say the words of the creed or whatever than when everybody else is doing it. They're not going to sing. And now there are exceptions to all of this, but there's a large proponent of families that have lost kids to the church, from the church. And then by the time those kids are in college, they've made their minds up in high school, and then you may send them to a Catholic high school, but I just, there are so many cases, having taught in Catholic high school, there are so many cases where people think they're sending them to a Catholic factory. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, you go there, man, they're going to come out, they're going to be good Catholics. And the answer is, it's not happening. Right. And they're just as likely to leave as anybody else is. I think they're more likely to come back later because of that that upbringing. But the honest truth is, they're still going to leave. And it's like college does this, that age does this. And so what's the answer, right? What is the answer to all the people? So I know you're all tuning in, you know, and right now you're going like, oh, he's getting ready to give us the answer. Thank goodness we're going to get the answer. Well, the answer is, I give Catholic. If you give Catholic, no, I'm kidding. Send your money, you know, with your kid's name on the envelope. You know, I'm starting to, like, I feel like a Tetzel or whatever, when right. A coin in the copper ring, a copper in the, whatever, what a kettle rings or whatever, a soul from purgatory springs. Right. You know, so the whole Protestant Reformation is getting ready to happen again. No, we're not selling, indulgences. We're not doing that. But it does strike on, like, what do I do with the kids? Here's the answer. Okay.
Nothing.
Well, okay. You jumped right to the end.
Did I steal your thunder?
You stole thunder. It's like nothing you can do.
Well, I'm telling you from experience.
No, the truth is, the answer is not nothing. There are things you can do.
Well, it's pray, but, okay? but also...
There's two things, Tom.
Okay.
One is prayer. Prayer is always good.
All right, so I got one right.
St. Monica.
All right.
You know?
Yep.
St. Monica. In fact, I'm giving a talk tonight on this, and I got an email from our friend Amy Weirich,
cool.
The former Attorney General of Shelby County. Memphis, and she just reached out to me because she heard I was giving that talk. She saw it online somewhere, Facebook something, and she says, hey, we got this group called Millions of Monicas, and we started it at St. Louis. We started a chapter there, and they're praying for the kids to come home, right? And
yeah.
So prayer is efficacious. You know, the prayers of St. Monica brought St. Augustine back to the church, and
right.
Who was a doctor and one of the great church fathers. Very effectual in the church.
I think one of the cool takeaways from St. Monica, too, if I'm not mistaken, I think she died shortly after he came into the church.
I don't know that, and we should
something
look that
tells
up.
Me that that's what occurred.
Well,
so ultimately, it's not about us.
No, so
it's
so,
about prayer,
but it's prayer. And
Holy
so
Spirit,
we, right? The other thing is. There's a negative thing, like what you can't do is you can't essentially teach them back into the church. You can't leave little Bible tracts on their pillow. You know, you can't have like, hey, you need to watch this video. Here's Deacon Jeff giving a talk. You need to watch this Deacon Jeff video. I promise your kids are not coming back in the church if you force them to watch one of my videos or something. You know, that's not going to take them to a talk. That's not going to work.
Videos are
no,
good, man.
No. But the point is, at the end of the day, it's not that's going to bring them back. It's actually you living as a witness. Yeah. So what you can do is live your Christian life. So you pray. They don't need to know even know you're praying. They don't even. In fact, that might push them away if he's like, hold on, I'm going to pray for you, son, right now at the dinner table. Lord, we just ask you to, you know, just destroy that
bolt of lightning.
That stony heart that he has, Lord, that cold, dead heart in my son's chest. No, that's not going to work. That is never going to work. So that kind of prayer is not going to work. But what I can say is if your private prayer, which would also include, gift of self, right? It would also include almsgiving and fasting and like eschewing those things, those comforts in your life on their behalf, you know? And there are certain times in our lives when our kids are doing things or are going through certain experiences where all of a sudden, you know, I'll say like, Bess, what do you want to drink? Water. Really? You want water? But you love Diet Coke. And it's like, no, I'm doing water. And she doesn't necessarily announce it. And then I go like, you're praying for so-and-so, aren't you? You're offering Diet Coke up. You're not drinking Diet Coke for... And it's like, and we go through periods where we do that kind of stuff.
Right.
You know, and I think that's efficacious. But that's the prayer part. But then also there's the part where you need to give them something to want to be. Mm-hmm. They need to be somebody who loves them unconditionally. Like... That literally means no strings attached.
Yeah.
That I don't love you because you're Catholic. I'm not going to love you only if you're Catholic. When kids think that, that's a terrible, terrible mistake. Mm-hmm. That's not even, according to church teaching, that's not a good thing to do.
Yeah, so you'll actually drive them even further away.
I think so. And the thing is, they'll see you as disingenuous if you are constantly trying to nag and manipulate them. If you're trying to... They'll see it as like trickery or whatever. It's like they need to be able to trust that you love them for who they are.
Mm-hmm. So there's a cardinal from the early 20th century, Cardinal Suhard, and I'm going to paraphrase him, but it's one of my all-time favorite quotes where he said that that the heart of being a witness is to live your life in such a way where your life would not make sense unless God existed, right? Like that, and in a way that we should... become this living mystery of love that people would be drawn into. And this actually circles back to what I was trying to get at a little bit earlier when we were talking about the relationship between reverence and
relevance.
And I was saying, well, there's also religion and the virtue of religion, because a lot of people don't realize that that's like going back to St. Thomas Aquinas. Virtue, religion is a virtue, actually. And it's under the... It's under... You know, the virtue of justice. It's a sub virtue of justice, but his description, St. Thomas Aquinas' description of what the virtue of justice of virtue of religion is, it says it is a virtue whose purpose is to render God the worship due to Him as the source of all being and the principle of all government of things.
So religion is always. Like as I was growing up, religion was like a dirty word.
Yeah, but
right, see, it was seemed like a negative, right?
Right.
And but what you're saying and what Aquinas is saying is it's it suddenly points to like our life having relevance and meaning. And we for as long as we've had written materials, we've had authors and philosophers, theologians all writing like what is the meaning of life? Why am I here? And all of the sciences, all of the arts, everything's always pointing to finding the God particle or seeing the most distant star. We're trying to discover God, our relevance, why we're here. And I think what you're getting at, Ziggy, is having our kids, like witnessing that to our kids, that there's a reason. We're not here just to like pay the bills and make sure we're comfortable in life and that we do a few good things and whatever. There's got to be something deeper than that. And again, it ties back to reverent worship. I think when you go to a church where there's not reverent worship, like, why do I need to go to there? Why do I need to go to that church? Can't I just watch it on TV? Mm-hmm. Right? Well, and what that experience is not, there's no meaning to it. There's no reason to go if you're just going to go and stand in a room while other people sing songs to impress themselves or what. I don't want to demean what people do to put together a liturgy. I know there's a lot of work in all of this stuff, but I do know that, like, people seeing relevance in that worship is really disheartening if they don't see the relevance. It's what's the point of doing it?
Well, the more reverent a liturgy is, the more God will be at the center of it. And the more God is at the center of your life, He's going to be relevant to everything as the source of all being and the principle of government of all things. And so if we are trying to order our lives around that, the effect will be a growth in that virtue of religion. We're going to live our lives in such a way that gives him that due. And that includes especially being that living witness, that living mystery of love, because that's ultimately what's going to is how God transforms hearts.
That's exactly right. Through our witness, right? Not our telling. It, you know, kids, I've always said this about raising kids. You know, kids will do what you do. They will not do what you say. And so they're going to mimic your behaviors. But at the end of the day, as they get older, if they see someone that they know that loves them, they trust and believe that they are loved by their parent, if they see that, then they need to also see a parent that is living a virtuous life, right? The nemo dat quod non habet. You cannot give what you do not have. You can't make them more holy if you aren't holy, and you need to live that holiness and then not tell them, like, now you need to be holy, son. You need to do this, son. Son, you need to like this. And this is the way daddy does it because I'm holy. That's not how it works. You live your life in a way where they go, like, I want to be like that. And even if they go, I don't agree with all the teachings of the church, but I like my dad. In fact, I love my dad because I know my dad loves me. And I promise you, there will be a time in that child's life where they're going to have an obstacle. They're going to have something come their way that's going to tear them down, that's going to mow over them, and they're going to not know what to do. And at the end of the day, when it comes down to it, in maybe even a fit of desperation, the reality is they're going to hearken back to, like, why are my parents content? Why are they happy? Because they've had the same trials in their life. Why are they happy? There must be something, and then there'll be that discovery, right? So pray for your kids and live a life that they want to emulate in their life. That's going to do it. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death.
Thanks for listening to The Catholic Cafe. If you'd like to contact Deacon Jeff, send him an email at deaconjeff@thecatholiccafe.com. Visit us on the web at thecatholiccafe.com. You can also find us on iTunes or follow us on Facebook and Twitter. The Catholic Cafe is brought to you by the Order of Malta Federal Association. Join us again at The Catholic Cafe, serving up salvation one cup of coffee at a time.